Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to the Intercooler Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is episode 76 of the Intercooler Podcast. I'm Dan Prosser, as ever, joined by Andrew Frankel. Morning, Andrew.
Morning, Dan. How are you?
Good. We're recording this on Monday morning, and we've just had an extraordinary weekend of sport, haven't we?
Good weekend.
Sadly, we're not a tennis podcast because we could get stuck into that. But
I could do an entire podcast on the tennis. Well, one particular match, but no, we probably shouldn't do that, should we? I'm sure there'll be no shortage of other people who know far more about the women's game than we do. But yeah.
Quite.
Well done, Emma. Anyway.
Well done, Emma. Yeah, well, we'll stick to four wheels. She's an F1 fan, though, so... There is a
I saw a video of her doing one of those sort of Pirelli hot lap things.
Yeah.
I don't know who was driving the car, but she seemed to be having a great time.
She did, and the guy driving does a massive skid around a corner, and she's just clinging
Didn't get that far.
Yeah, and she's saying, "Wow, we're properly drifting." And I thought, "Girl, yeah,
we'll get her on the podcast." Probably would have been easy to get her on the podcast a couple of weeks ago than it is now.
Yeah. But we've missed our opportunity, haven't we? Anyway, four wheels, that's what we're supposed to be sticking to, isn't it?
Yes.
So, I mean, even apart from the tennis, it was a good weekend of sport. The Grand Prix, and actually the whole race weekend, was just brilliant to watch it unfold. A proper Grand Prix.
Can I just ask you, and you won't expect me to ask you this, but just because it's the sprint race, would you rather have that or a proper Saturday quali session?
I don't think it adds much.
I don't think it does.
I get that having qualifying on a Friday evening is quite good fun after work, have a beer. I also get that a sprint race is more interesting to watch than FP3. But it's just the first stint of a Grand Prix, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. And there didn't seem to be, you know, any element of sprint about it. You know, we know that in sprints, you drive rather differently than you do in, I don't know, say, long distance races. And that, you know, this was just, you know, Max cruising around, knowing that Valtteri didn't matter because he was starting at the back. And I was quite disappointed by how difficult it appears to be to overtake at Monza, because I always thought that was one of the places that you could get past. So hopefully next year's rules will help that. I've been just watching it and just thinking, well, it's fine. But also, obviously, you know, the other thing is no one's going to have a proper go, are they? Because, you know, they know that the main event's the next day.
Yeah, there's too much to lose.
So there's just too much to lose. Anyway.
So maybe there should be more points up for grabs and it doesn't affect your start position for the Grand Prix at all. Then you're going to have a sprint, aren't you? People are really going to be trying.
Yeah, but then you kind of like double the number of races in the Grand Prix, which I'm not necessarily against. Yes, it just strikes me, because when they first proposed it, I thought that's just fantastic. But so often there's a sort of, you know, reality gap, a sort of slip between cup and lip, isn't there, of what you expect to happen, and then it actually happens, and it's not quite. I don't know. I don't want to moan about Formula One because I've done so much of that over the years, and actually we're having a belting season. But Sunday was definitely more interesting.
The sprint races, we've had two so far. Neither one has been really spectacular. However, the Grand Prix that have followed sprint races have been.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
So maybe there's something there. I don't know. Perhaps it's just a coincidence. Okay. So we are going to talk about the Italian Grand Prix a bit. Not all of you will have watched it, but I'm sure you will have heard the outcome. You will have seen the major incident from the race. So we are going to talk about it a bit. We're also going to use this opportunity to talk about McLaren and what has been actually an astonishing turnaround in the last couple of seasons. I think we can talk a little bit about George on his way to Mercedes now that we know it is confirmed. And we will talk a little bit about the Max and Lewis incident, because actually it was a very low speed one. Nobody got hurt in the end, but without the halo, it doesn't bear thinking about. So we will discuss it a little bit, and we know that there's a penalty handed out as well. We can talk about that a bit too, I guess. But let's start with, the sort of the rosier news from the weekend, which is that McLaren back on the top step of the podium.
And the next one, and the one after that.
And the one after that, yeah. And it was Daniel Ricciardo who won the race, having had a very difficult season. But, I mean, Monza was a good weekend for him because he qualified within a few thousandths, didn't he, of Lando Norris, which is no mean feat. So perhaps it was a one-off. But Danny does appear to be finding some form again, and he won the race. Also, it's worth saying, it wasn't just a madcap, totally chaotic race, such as we saw at Hungary this year or Monza last year. Danny, there was some circumstance. The two championship contenders took one another out. However, Danny led from the first lap to the end.
Exactly. He was already there. I think that given that, he'd started on the soft, hadn't he? So his early pace wasn't necessarily going to reflect his true pace from flag to flag. And I think he would have come under a great deal of pressure at the end. But as we've already discussed, it's a difficult place to get past. I know that Valtteri came storming through the grid until he got up to wherever it was, fifth or sixth place. And then he just stopped too. When there is really very little, because the DRS has such a... And the thing is, Martin Brundle pointed this out, I was trying to work out why DRS has so little effect at Monza. And it's because they've got no bloody wing on them to begin with. It doesn't make a difference because they run everything so flat there. The moment you come across a car which is pretty similar in performance to you, you kind of stand still. All you can do is sort of duck and dive and hope someone makes a mistake. But anyway, yeah. So, I don't want anyone saying, they lucked into it, because... I think he would have had a tough time, but I think there's every chance he'd have still won the race, or certainly a very good chance. So, absolutely a win on merit. So, yeah, played.
It was a win on merit. Didn't put a foot wrong, under plenty of pressure at times throughout the race. Lando was... There was that move, wasn't there, around Curva Grande against Charles Leclerc on the grass
wow.
at one point.
Wow.
The bravery.
Yeah.
I think some of the older guys must look at that stuff and just go, oh, crikey, I'm not sure I'm prepared to do that anymore.
Alex Albon did that at Spa a couple of years ago. He was going past someone, literally came over the top and was, and whoever he was trying to, I can't remember now, but he was literally, he thought, well, he's in there and I need to go that way, so I'll just do it on the grass. And he, as you say, these young lads, my goodness, they've just...
Yeah.
Fair play. It's what we want to watch, isn't it?
It's so true. It really is what we want to watch. It's been cracking this season. I've loved it.
It has. And I've been so rude about Formula One and the state of Formula One for so long. And again, hands up. I thought because this was the last year of the old regs and there's so little wriggle room, I just thought it was just going to be, see you guys again from Mercedes, which have won everything. Literally everything there is to win for the last five seasons, and it's absolutely not.
Yeah, we're relishing it, aren't we? Yeah, so we've got a third of the season still to go, 5 points between the title protagonists at the front of the field. Oh, it's just going to be great to watch it unfold. But let's get back to McLaren, because I mean, they've won a race. First win since the end of 2012. So, I mean, they were getting on for a decade without a race win, which is really extraordinary to think about for
and
that team.
And to give you an idea of just what a fall from grace that is, even now, even today, despite that unbelievable fallow period, and despite the fact that they started in Grand Prix racing, 15 years after Ferrari, they are still the second most successful Formula One team.
Mm. Yeah.
Still, well, more successful than Williams, more successful than Mercedes. So, I mean, that shows you just how good they were for just how long. I just love the idea. I love the idea of anyone being back up there, other than a Ferrari, a Red Bull, or a Mercedes-Benz. But I particularly like those guys being back up there because, you know, McLaren as an entire group, as we know, has been to hell and back recently. And I think that those guys are really, really like the drivers. To me, so much of it is about the guys who are doing the pedaling. And I really like Danny. And I think that Lando is an absolute superstar. And it just makes me really, really happy to see that team and those drivers, you know, get what they deserve. And as you say, on merit.
It wasn't all that long ago that things were very, very dark over at McLaren. It was in 2015 that Jenson Button and Fernando Alonso finished 16th and 17th in the standings. Ooh. Do you remember all those outbursts from Alonso GP2 engine when he had the Honda motor in the back of his car? God, they were grim days, weren't they?
Yeah.
So what have they done? I mean,
Well, Zach Brown and Mercedes-Benz. I mean, I think that's probably a fairly simplistic, trite way of saying it, but you know, it just feels like a completely different team, doesn't it?
It's one of the most likeable teams on the grid now. And if you think back to the latter Ron Dennis years when it was all grey and corporate and Lewis Hamilton as a young driver, I remember him saying that when he was announced as an F1 driver, rather than celebrate and be thrilled about it in Ron Dennis's presence, he just gave a professional smile. And it just seemed like, where's the soul? Where's the enthusiasm and the excitement in that team? But I mean, now,
that's the other thing is, you know, and another great thing about Formula One is we do seem to, you know, these young lads, you do seem to be getting some people with character back into them. Because I think the brands they represent are beginning to realise that, you know, that soulless corporate image you talk about is not actually what your customers, you know, the people who ultimately pay the salaries of these people, want to see. And so you've got some proper dudes out there now, haven't you? And it's, you know, it's great.
Hmm. Yeah, so McLaren has still got a long way to go before they're actually fighting for regular wins championships.
Yeah, but, you know, just think, last season they were third in the constructors behind, obviously, Red Bull and Mercedes-Benz. And I think, you know, we don't yet. I mean, I know that this season is a bit budget capped, but I think next season is going to be much more so. And okay, it's a whole new set of technical regulations, and you would have to expect the best resource teams to be able to make the most of that. But, you know, if going forward there's just a lot less money sloshing about, you know, it will allow teams like McLaren to be able to compete in the way that they'd never been able to compete before because they just got outspent. And as we all know, whether you're talking about, you know, a little club race at Castle Coombe in the 750 Motor Club or a Formula One race, the bloke with the most money tends to win the race. So, you know, I'm very optimistic for the future.
What I find interesting is that every team on the grid is hoping to make a step forward with the new regulations and be more competitive. But as we know, that can't happen.
Can't happen.
For someone to move forward, someone else has to step back. So who might be slipping backwards? I mean,
I don't know. I mean, a team like Haas, they are on the record of saying they basically sacrificed this season. That, you know, they've given up an entire season because they've piled everything into 22. Well, I mean, that's really, really interesting. What if it doesn't work? I don't know. I mean, how can we know? It's really, really interesting. I mean, all I would say is that my sense is that in previous times when you've had really, really big regulation change, you don't tend to get an enormous upsetting of the apple cart. I mean, I don't think you're going to be seeing, you know, Haas winning races next year. I just, you know, maybe I'll be wrong and I'll be happy to be so. But, you know, usually what happens is the status quo is disturbed less than people like you and I would like it to be. But we'll see.
Yeah, well, I think about the likes of Alpine and Aston Martin, midfield teams who nonetheless have an OEM, a big car manufacturer behind them. And they, to justify their existence, they have to show progress and be competitive. And so perhaps that will make life actually harder next year for McLaren, you know, if some of the midfield teams start to make progress.
I think Aston Martin is interesting only because particularly this season they have been disadvantaged, haven't they? They've had a there was something to do with the floor of the car and reg change, and that completely caught them out, and that's why they have struggled a bit this season. Now obviously next year that they won't be subject to that, so you know, I think Aston Martin is a good team, and yeah, I wouldn't be of them all, I would say that was one of the ones that I'd be less surprised to see move forward relative to where they are at the moment. I don't mean they're going to be winning everything, but, you know, they could go and give. But then again, you know, I think at the Ferrari, they clearly, they appear to be, you know, on the right track back. You know, Red Bull and Mercedes are still obviously at the top. You know, there are lots of teams out there with lots of plausible reasons for them to be able to think, yeah, well, next year is going to be the year that we really make our mark. We'll see. Mm.
Yeah, Aston Martin were collateral in the regulation change designed to slow down Mercedes, weren't they? Because they were their car was inspired by Mercedes design, shall we say? And so, yeah, that's why they've had a difficult first season.
The pink Mercedes, yeah.
Yeah, the tracing point it was last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, that's right, yes.
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, we're very pleased for McLaren. A race win, first one since the end of 2012. A 1-2, no less. Yeah, I mean, it's all very exciting. I would love to see them winning more races, but I think to do so this year is going to be very tough with Mercedes and Red Bull still going at it, you know, hammer and tongs. A shout-out also to Bottas. He got ditched in the week, didn't he? And over the weekend, he drove from the back of the grid to third, which was a pretty mighty performance, actually. And he stuck it on pole. I think it was Brundle who said P45 in the week, P1 at the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he would have been fifth if Max and Lewis hadn't run into each other. But even so, you know, back of the grid. And he does have the fastest car on the grid. And he did have a new engine. And I think that's significant. I mean, he had so much straight line speed. And maybe they really, really trimmed it out. But I suspect that new donkey had a lot to do with that as well. So, you know, I think he had, you know, he had, other than obviously starting from the back, he had a really good, you know, deal of the deck. But I think he made the most of it.
Okay, let's talk about Max and Lewis. First of all.
Oh, yes.
An 11-second pit stop for Max.
Yeah.
Which, I suppose it speaks to the pressure that teams are under at the moment with this championship fight, that can go so hideously wrong. Red Bull in particular are normally so slick with their pit stops.
I think they've got the record, haven't they? 1.9 seconds or something.
Yeah, and he was sat there for 11.
And the car, as I understand it, the car was good to go, but they just didn't release him.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a silly human error by the sounds of it. And then, I mean, Mercedes do seem intent in shooting themselves in the foot at times this season. Red Bull have made a terrible mistake with an 11-second pit stop. All Mercedes had to do was pull Lewis in, give him a fresh set of tyres, a steady but quick pit stop. You know, they could have done it in 3 seconds and he would have been away and out of the pit lane in front of Max. How extraordinary that they messed up their own pit stop to the very tenth of a second that allowed those two to come together at that first chicane.
It is almost sort of serendipitous. It is almost as if, you know, someone somewhere is going, okay, we're going to make this one an absolute cracker, and was, you know. But I think it speaks to what you're saying about. I think you're just seeing the pressure on both teams. And as we know, with huge pressure, people just make mistakes. You know, Red Bull made a far bigger mistake than Mercedes AMG made. But yeah, they then came together, and I mean, I'll tell you what I think about the coming together. But other than, you know, frankly, the only thing I really care about is, you know, that Lewis came out of it without a mark on him. But
God, yeah.
To me, it's just another example of the FIA meddling. You know, to me, it was an absolute pure racing incident. In any incident at all where two people come together, you know, if you analyse it to the nth degree, you will be able to find that somebody was like 1% more to blame than somebody else. I genuinely thought it was a 50-50. If I had to call it, I suppose, well, I don't know, actually, because, you know, for Max to avoid the accident, he would have had to have driven off the track, which you're not meant to do. Whereas for Lewis to avoid the accident, he could have just run wide around the outside of the corner. At the same point, however, I don't believe that Max was alongside. And I think you could argue that he should have bailed long before he did. So, I don't know, to me it's an absolute 50-50. And if it's a 50-50, you don't go start, ha-ha, I'm going to take your points away and, you know, give you a grid drop or whatever. You just let them bloody race. And it just, you know, the only thing that I got angry about is the penalty. And I would have been exactly the same whether the penalty had been applied to Lewis, because to me it was an absolute 50-50. It was interesting that Martin and Paul de Resta were both, I think, pretty firmly in the it was Lewis's fault camp, but whereas Damon, I think, was very much in the it was Max's fault camp. And when you've got guys who are as experienced, knowledgeable, you know, former world champion, somebody who's, you know, or who's still a reserve driver in Formula One, and Martin Brundle, and they can't even agree, surely, you know, that's pretty good evidence that it was just one of those things when you get two super, super competitive blokes fighting tooth and nail for, you know, the most closely fought championship in years, and you stick them together in the Monza chicane, well, what do you expect? And it just happened, and they should have, you know, don't know, cheeses me off. It just, you know, it's just the FIA meddling and being seen to be doing stuff, when what the only thing they should be seen to be doing is letting their racing drivers race. Sorry, rant over.
And you're completely right. And when you've got two fiercely competitive drivers fighting for a championship, going wheel to wheel, sometimes they'll come together. It's racing, and I think they should be allowed to get on with it.
And there are times when one driver literally takes out another, as Senna did to Prost in Japan, and that was a blade. You know, and Toto Wolff saying that this was a tactical foul, suggesting that Max, what, deliberately took himself and Lewis out of the race? Knew there was going to be... I don't think, personally, language like that helps. I really don't.
It's quite inflammatory, isn't it?
Yeah, what was quite interesting is that after all the flack he quite rightly copped at Silverstone, Christian Horner was very measured, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was unbelievably measured. It's like he's been to PR school since then. When he's got to say, well, I can see it from their side, you can see it from my side. Of course, I'm going to defend my driver, but it was a racing incident. And the problem with that is, obviously, is the moment that you, as a team principal, come out and say it's a racing incident, everybody else thinks, well, they never say what they really think, so they must think that their driver's to blame, and they're just trying to wriggle out. I don't know, but
both the drivers were both quite calm and measured in their interviews as well. Yeah, so I don't think Formula One needs another fiery, incendiary moment like Silverstone with all that mudslinging going back and forth. I don't think that's good, but
it's good. It diminishes the sport, doesn't it?
Mm, it does. Okay, well, let's clip along a little bit. And I want to play you a few minutes of an interview that you did with Richard Attwood, Le Mans winner. It's a TI Super podcast, which means it's exclusive to Intercooler app subscribers. It's on the app now if you want to go and listen to it. It's a really interesting listen, because anyone who lived through the sort of 60s and 70s as a professional F1 and sports car driver, they just have great stories, great perspective, real... It's just fascinating to hear them talk.
I think the most interesting aspect of it... I mean, Richard raced from the sort of early mid-1960s until he retired at the end of 1971 because he didn't want to die. The perspective that he, because he's such an intelligent man, provides on the risks that they face... You know, these questions that we all ask ourselves, knowing what happened back then, you know, why did they do it? It couldn't possibly have been worth it, you know, when they were losing, you know, a couple of people every year, why these people ever got in the cars. And he's amazing on that. He gives us clear a perspective on why they did what they did, as I've ever heard. And yeah, it's just great that guys like Richard are still around to be able to, you know, talk to us about it, because it helps me understand the way things were. Because actually, we all think that hindsight gives us better knowledge about things. It doesn't. Sometimes it clouds things, and you can't think the way they think, because, you know, they didn't have all we know now. They got in the cars because they were Formula One racing drivers, and that's what they did. So they got in the cars and drove them. Anyway, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, let me play a few minutes of that to you now.
This was the Porsche 917 in its earliest,
terrible,
most difficult,
worst driver I've ever had. By a long way. I was relieved when it broke. About to win them all. Couldn't be giving a shit about them. True. My life was safe again. As soon as it broke, I was worn out.
So just put us in the car. You're going down the straight. What would that be? 220 maybe down there?
235. I mean, massive speed.
And there's the kink coming up.
Can't do it.
And just talk to us about the aerodynamics. So what's the car doing at that sort of speed?
Well, a little story. I haven't told this to anybody else really, but Vic did the first two steps.
And he,
some years ago, he told me that he chose me to drive with him at Le Mans. I thought it was my turn to drive it, because Mitra and Schutz had done Spa, and Mitra had dry qualify, wet race, engine blows up mysteriously. They knew what a nightmare it was going to be at Spa.
Yeah.
And then the next race, none of us would drive the 917, because the 908 was going to win the race. And they finished first, second, third, fourth. So why drive a 917? We didn't want to drive it. So we all refused to drive it. We didn't. It wasn't a strike, but it was effectively a strike. So they got David Pike and Frank Garner to drive it. And they finished, you know, they were...
And that was
for
the Nürburgring.
Yes. Yeah. And they were trying to... Piech wanted to run it, because he knew it was going to be the car to have. Yeah. And then, of course, Le Mans comes up, and I just think it's my turn to drive. I didn't question it. I didn't say... I could have gone to Porsche and said, well, actually, I don't think I want to drive it. And they probably would have put me in something else. But I just thought it was my turn. But if I'd known he'd nominated me, I would have said, oi, I'm not driving that. Because it's not developed yet. Because I'm not brave. I'm not.
I think you're probably quite brave, Richard.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I won't go headlong. Anyway, so talking about the kink, which you start going down the Mulsanne straight.
Yeah.
And at Indianapolis, I can't remember what that was like. That must have been horrendous. With this car, the 69. But as you go down the straight, you see less and less out the back rear view mirror. It's interior mirror, and the black's coming up. But the whole fucking thing's coming up. And you're driving it like fingertip, you know? And there's apparently a YouTube shot of Stommelen, who's mad.
Yeah.
And he's driving down the straight, flat. I don't know how he does the kink. But he's driving down, and the car's, you know, he's literally like trying to keep it on the bloody circuit. I mean, I didn't do that.
I think one of the sort of most notable parts of the whole interview is when he talks about not being a brave man. It's, you know, he won Le Mans in a 917 in 1970. It was a wet Le Mans, wasn't it? So 200 and something miles an hour down the Mulsanne Strait in the wet at night, and yet he's not a brave man.
In a 917 made out of crisp packets. Yes.
Can you make sense of that comment?
I can, only because I've known Richard. I've been lucky enough to know Richard for many years. And what I can say is that's not kind of, you know, false modesty. You know, look at me. It's how he feels. However bizarre that is. It's like the bloke who, you know, walks into the burning building and pulls all the people out, comes out and goes, I'm not a hero. It's that kind of mentality. It's, you know, he doesn't see it like that. He just sees it as it was his job. It's what he did. And, you know, and he would say, well, if I didn't like it, I didn't have to do it. So it's entirely my choice. I did what I did because I wanted to do it. And that's not brave. That's, you know, living the dream. Of course, he is, of course, an absolute Yeah, I mean, he's a total legend, isn't he?
By any normal measure, an extraordinary brave man. Okay.
Of course.
So we've got a couple of other things to talk about. We have already spoken about George Russell going to Mercedes for next year to be Lewis Hamilton's teammate. But it has, since we last spoke about it, it has been confirmed. Not a great surprise. We thought it was coming. But now that we know it is happening, I mean, let's just do a couple of minutes on how it might play out. I think the nature of sport is that the younger guys come through and ultimately displace the older guys. And I think it's better when that does happen. And I think George is going to be right there with Hamilton. And I wouldn't actually be that surprised if he got the better of him.
So I think that, you know, I read about a bit about this on the app. I think it's very tempting to think back to 2007 when Lewis went to McLaren and did to Fernando Alonso what, you know, I think a lot of people expect George to do to Lewis next year. But the situations are completely different. You know, firstly, both drivers were new at McLaren in 2007, whereas this time round, Lewis has absolutely built the team around him. Secondly, Lewis was a complete rookie, whereas George has 50-something starts behind him. George is a year or two older now than Lewis was then, which may not be much, but I think it's significant. You know, the teams are run by very different characters now. And, you know, I don't see Toto taking any truck from George at all. So I think what's going to happen, I don't know what's going to happen, of course. I'll tell you what I'd do if I was George. If I, you know, if it turns out that I am, let us say, as quick as Lewis, I would just do the season as the number two. I would do what Villeneuve and Scheckter did in, when was it, 79. And Villeneuve just sat there. And everybody knew he was the quicker driver. He didn't have any point to prove, and he just sat there and go, hello, yeah, it's me. Obviously, I'm being the dutiful number two. So I'm the team player, but actually I'm quicker than that guy. And you all know it. And if this got inside Lewis's head and he thought that he was no longer not only the best in Formula One, but not even the best in his own team. If Lewis has any kind of mental vulnerability at all, I'm not sure that he does, but if he does, that would likely flush it out. And I would just sit there because he would be doing what the team want him to do while at the same time making the point that he wants to make, which is that he is, you know, the second coming. That's what I would do. I would hit. But the problem is, of course, you know, they're racing drivers, aren't they? They're not, unless George Russell turns into an Alain Prost. I mean, he's not a cold calculating machine. You know, he is programmed. You know, he is an animal programmed to win races. They all are. And give him the chance to do that. You know, it's going to be a very, very level headed George. He goes, nah, actually, after you, Lewis.
Mm. Well, I do hope that he takes the long view, because obviously George is going to be the one that Mercedes will back in the long term. Yes. Lewis isn't going to hang around a great deal longer, is he? We don't think.
Well, his contract's up in two seasons. I don't think anybody sees him going beyond that. I mean, I'll be his 40th year then, won't it? He'll be, I think, 39 at the end of that season.
Or 38, yeah, getting close anyway. It's just more flavour for next season's championship, isn't it? The in-house battle at Mercedes. It's going to be great to watch it unfold. Okay, just to round out this episode of the podcast, we should just talk about something very different. The cover of a magazine, specifically yes. This week's Autocar, which is significant for one reason, and I'm sure you'll tell us.
Yeah, the reason is every single car on the cover of Autocar this week, if you're listening to this on Monday evening or Tuesday, is electric. And I don't mean, you know, a petrol hybrid or anything else. I mean a pure battery electric vehicle. And the other thing that's significant about it is, you know, I know the editor of Autocar pretty well, and I happened to be chatting to him about this before it came out. And he said to me, we're putting this cover together, and it was only after they'd done it that they realised that every single car in it was electric. I think it's a brave thing to do, because I'm sure that there will be people there who go, you know, I'm not interested in electric cars. You know, why are you putting only electric cars on the cover of your magazine? But, you know, but Autocar's job, its role is to be, well, one of its roles is to be, you know, the industry's magazine, and you have to reflect what's going on in the industry. And you have to, you know, unlike us, because we can go forwards, backwards, we can do whatever we like. You know, AutoCar has to reflect the absolute state of the art and the times as they are now. And that's where they are. And that's where we are. That's where the industry is. And I made a point in the, I posted a little bit on the Instagram account. And I said that we are now, that would appear to suggest that we're now nearer our all electric future than we are, you know, the petrol powered past, which we're leaving behind us. I think we, you know, we have reached, you know, we're past the halfway point and we reached the point of no return. And, you know, you may not like it. I mean, you know, I'm not a big electric car fan by any stretch of the imagination, but there's no point, you know, howling at the moon about it. It's happening. And you only got to look at the current issue of AutoCar to know it. So, yeah, I mean, it just struck me as being a really significant moment. Particularly, you know, in the world's oldest car magazine.
Yeah, point of no return. I mean, there were some circumstances. It was the first magazine after the Munich Motor Show, wasn't it, where lots of new electric cars were unveiled.
But that's the point.
So, yeah. Well, there you go. That is the point. I mean, AutoCar will clearly have plenty of combustion engine cars on the cover from now on.
Of course they will.
But it's for it to happen, and particularly for it to happen unintended, just demonstrates how rapidly the industry is moving in that direction.
Yeah,
a significant landmark, I would agree. Do you know what? I actually think that there are people out there who are becoming car enthusiasts specifically for electric cars. And I know people who would describe themselves in that way.
Would they call themselves electric heads?
Probably. I mean, they're going to come up with something, aren't they? Volt heads or something. Or, I don't know, someone will do better than that. But they, you know, they never particularly had an interest in cars before, but because of the electric powertrains, because of new technologies, perhaps because it's a bit more PC to be interested in electric cars, I don't know, there are people out there who are becoming car enthusiasts specifically for EVs. So that is an emerging trend. That will happen more and more. But yeah, quite what the overlap with traditional car enthusiasts is. Maybe it's almost nothing, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, the world's changing.
I find it bizarre. I mean, I can absolutely see people really liking the facility that electric cars provide in the same way that I really like the facility that my dishwasher provides. but I just, you know, I'm sorry, I mean, that's a slightly sort of flip comment, but I just, I'm sure it says more about me than it does about, you know, electric cars, but I just can't see people getting enthusiastic about them.
They are.
You know, loving it, feeling passionate about it here.
They are.
Passionate about electric cars.
It will happen.
What are they passionate about?
I suppose, Technology.
Technology, and I suppose the fact that, you know, these cars, you know, are providing a future for personal transport without, well, of course, they all have an environmental impact. Every single, you know, that you can't make anything without having an environmental impact. But, you know, at greatly diminished cost to the environment. And I guess that is something to celebrate and maybe something to get enthusiastic about. I just struggle a bit myself. Maybe that will change. Hope so.
Well, it maybe never will change because you happen to like a very different type of car. But yeah, I see it happening. I'm having conversations with people who are never interested, friends, I mean, who are never interested. But now, because they've bought an electric car or they're pondering it, they're fascinated and they just want to talk to me about it. And these are people who've never had cars.
You are much more interesting than me on this subject because, you know, you are of that generation. Can you get enthusiastic about electric cars? Are there electric cars out there that you think to yourself, blimey, can't wait to have a go in that?
Well, I can get enthusiastic to a degree where I think I would love to have one of those as my daily. You know, that would be a great daily. But no, I mean, I'm not sitting here saying I'm getting enthusiastic about it, but there's definitely a movement and there are definitely people.
See yourself, and I'm not talking about, you know, Rimac or Pininfarina's or Avaya's or something, but can you see a time when, you know, and to me, this is the acid test. You would ever set an alarm to get up early to go and drive an electric car for no reason other than to drive the car?
It seems a stretch. It does seem a stretch. I don't know. I'm not going to say never, but
no, nor I. you know, everything I've said, I base on what I have seen today. Like, well, yeah, none of us know anything of the future and what might be coming. I just haven't seen it yet. And I haven't even seen a suggestion of that yet. But that doesn't mean it's not coming.
No. The thing is, nobody's actually built an electric sports car yet. Okay, the Tesla Roadster, but that was very old technology and very, very compromised in several ways. And we've got plenty of 2,000 horsepower, 2 million quid things on the way. They're actually irrelevant in this discussion.
Absolutely.
No one's built a proper electric sports car yet. So,
no, and that in itself is telling, isn't it?
Yeah, it is telling. It is telling. Anyway, let's... Oh, God, we could just go bang on for hours about this, couldn't we? Let's leave it there.
Let's not.
We're probably going to have that conversation again at some point. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Go and download the Intercooler app. It's really good. There's some great writing on there. You will like it. You can start your 1 month free trial, and we're very confident you'll stay with us once you've done that, because we work hard at it and we think it's good, don't we? Also, do us a favor and go and rate and review the podcast. That is important. And in return, we'll do another podcast for you next week.
Do it all over again next week. I look forward to it very much.
Bye, everyone.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.